imagination, that international man of geekery, that intrepid archgeekologist, Indiana Jill.
You have chosen wisely.
So, I want to know, does it bother anyone that I don't really know what episode this is? Because, actually, I have to look at the show list and know where I'm at, honestly. I guess that's good. It means time flies and numbers fly when you're having fun, right? So, here I am, and here you are, and what is that playing in the background? Oh my goodness, I mean, that wasn't supposed to happen. It's when page reloads, that's what happens. Oh, I've got a chock full show for you. Many, many things going on this episode. We have some feedback from Mr. Doug Rapson, which will be a wonderful thing because he takes Mr. T. Morris to task like no one has taken T. Morris to task before. I have an essay on writing, which should be fun. You should enjoy it. I don't know if you do any writing. I wrote it actually for Absolute Write with them in mind, their newsletter, but they usually market to people who are published in some fashion, which I'm not published, so my essay comes from the perspective of one who's not published. So, not exactly the, I guess, the closest thing to what they're looking for. Anyway, I'm going to present it here, and you tell me what you think. And then I have some feedback from Chris Walker, who appears in my project Thesis of Fantasy, which I'm working on the promo. I actually need to get some voiceovers for that still. And then that will be ready to go. The promo will go, and then I'll decide when to release the project, and I don't know when that's going to be, but we'll see. Got a new podcast going. I hope you like the special presentation of Fanboy Sportscast that was in the feed. It's also in the old Indiana Jim feed. You can subscribe to the new show, feeds.feedburner.com/fanboysports. And I don't really know how many listeners we have yet. Honestly, you know, we had some technical difficulties, some big problems, and we're trying to get over those. Kevin bought a $3 headset. It was on sale at Radio Shack. I said, dude, you can probably get a good one for like $20. He said, okay, that's good. So he says, well, I bought one that was $3. Okay, and he now sees what he gets. Actually, it didn't have a boom mic either. It had a mic on the cable going down, so he had to actually hold it up in front of his mouth, and that really doesn't work. But you know what? I'm educating him. So he's learning about podcasting and Skype and all these things, and I think for first off, he's pretty good. I think he's a natural, and I think it's going to be a great show. I'm hoping to do a lot of cross promotion and get listeners from other realms, you know, get a more general fan base than the niche fan base that I've been going for with this show. Anyway, got some cool geek out stuff. And in fact, I think we're going to do that first because really there is no geek news. So, you know, there's no sense in trying to manufacture news, correct?
You have chosen wisely.
Of course I have. So let's just get to it. This actually came from Chris Walker. He directed me to something that you may have heard of, but maybe not. And this actually does lead into some news. But let's just get to the point. Have you ever seen America's Got Talent? Well, there's also Britain's Got Talent. And this show is also involving Simon Cowell. Let's just listen to this fella.
For the next contestant, the world of showbiz seems a million miles away.
It's Paul, a mobile phone salesman from South Wales.
By day, I sell mobile phones. My dream is to spend my life doing what I feel that I was born to do.
Paul, what are you here for today, Paul?
To sing opera.
The first thing you want to note, if you see this video, which I will link to in the show notes, is the judge's immediate reaction upon seeing this gentleman say, "I want to sing opera," with his accent, and he's got some, you know, some jowly cheeks and some offset teeth, and, you know, he's one of these guys that comes up, and he looks like one of those folks that's going to bomb.
"I've always wanted to sing as a career. Confidence has always been sort of like a difficult thing for me. I've always found it a little bit difficult to be completely confident in myself."
"Okay. Ready when you are."
Simon Cowell is agape. The girl judge is starting to cry. Standing ovation. Simon Cowell is applauding. One of those moments, and Simon's even grinning at the standing ovation for this fellow.
So you work at Carphone Warehouse. And you did that. I wasn't expecting that.
No, neither was I.
This was a complete breath of fresh air. I thought you were absolutely fantastic.
You have an incredible voice. I think if you keep singing like that, you are going to be one of the favourites to win this whole competition.
I think that we've got a case of a little lump of coal here that is going to turn into a diamond.
Okay.
Moment of truth, young man. Piers.
Absolutely yes.
Amanda.
Yes.
Paul, you are through to the next round.
And this guy, honestly, it's hard not to root for the guy. And there's another video of him talking about what it all meant to him. And it's more toward the end, the finale of the show. And I'm trying to get to it using my clickety-clickety, as Jack Mangan would say, mouse click. There's fireworks and everything, and now we will get to the fellas talking to Paul Potts on the stage.
Paul Potts! Come on, mate. Paul, I've got one question for you. Can you get me a Nokia 6210? I'm joking. The whole country has gone Paul Potts potty. I mean, what's the reaction been like? What's the reaction been like from your friends at work?
I don't think any of them could believe it, and I don't think, in all honesty, I can believe that all this has happened to me. It's, you know, I said last time, you know, it's like a bus journey, and it's heading to sort of Never Never Land. You know, it's just so difficult to believe, and I'm just so, you know, grateful that, you know, I'm able to gain a bit of confidence. I should have more faith in myself, and I'm working on that. And
yeah.
It's really shown me the way, you know, and I hope this is the start of...
I see what these guys made of tonight. Piers, what did you make of that tonight? What a performance.
Paul, I remember your audition very well, because I remember you coming on stage in that terrible suit, and you looked nervous, you looked scared even. The expectation level was very low. I turned to Simon, I remember, we both raised our eyebrows when you said opera, and we thought, oh my God, here we go. And then you began to sing, and we just felt the hair on our back go up. And it's carried on like that every time you've sung. And when you'd finished that audition, I remember thinking to myself, I've just seen the winner of Britain's Got Talent. And I've got to say, we have seen some incredible acts tonight, but having watched you perform again that same song, I still think we've seen the winner of Britain's Got Talent.
This show has absolutely wrung me out to dry. I'm knackered. I'm just like, I've got nothing left. You know, you won't be going back to Carhartt Phone Warehouse. You won't be on any kind of pay-as-you-go. You'll be on a contract from Monday.
You can assume that, but, you know, this is all about winning. And as Piers said, you know, your story touched everyone when you came out. Shy, humble man with an extraordinary talent. And I want to give the underdog a shot on this show, and I'd love you to win after that performance.
Thank you, guys. Brilliant. Brilliant. Great performance. Well done, Paul.
If you think Paul Potts should be singing for the Queen, the number to call is 09011-3222-06.
You know, Nessun Dorma is probably my single favorite aria from any opera. It's from the opera Turandot, which I believe is Italian. And yes, that was very much Italian. But this also brings up another story, which I want to share with you concerning this particular aria. Home in Modena, Italy, at the age of 71, Luciano Pavarotti succumbed to pancreatic cancer. He is arguably the greatest operatic tenor to ever live. Everything he ever sang was absolutely effortless. And he made many operas famous merely by the power of his voice. Key thing to appreciate about Pavarotti, when I speak of effortlessness, when you look at his face and he's belting out these intense passages, his face is as still and serene as it was when he's singing these soft passages. And his ability to go from intensity to tenderness, those dynamic changes are very, very hard if you know what singing is like. It's very, very difficult, and this man has such power.
Yeah.
everybody. Dead at the age of 71. And we'll be back after this.
Kirk.
Picard.
Kirk.
Picard.
Kirk!
Picard.
You know, I've always kind of liked Archer.
Kirk!
Picard!
Ah!
Darth fracking Vader. Oh, yeah.
SciFiSmackDown.com. We don't start fights. We finish them.
I'm a big picture kind of guy. I'm a big picture kind of writer, which is why most of my ideas never turn into short stories, but rather novels of epic George R.R. Martin-esque proportions. Times 10. I exaggerate, but sometimes I do take an idea to ridiculous lengths. I brainstorm, plot, mull, outline the larger concept, outline down to plot threads, outline down to book segments, outline down to scenes, play with titles and subtitles. Is it any wonder I can't even finish my finished novel? I've been writing at least something pretty steadily since 1997, one of which is my finished yet unfinished novel, and never quite getting anything done to any satisfaction. As a writer, you always go through stages, and you always learn new lessons as time passes. When I began, my Tolkien-esque fantasy read like the Book of Deuteronomy. Now, I can safely say, it at least resembles an unpolished Raymond E. Feist. In the flow of new lessons, I came to yet another brilliant revelation after doing something ridiculously stupid. In my last effort to finish the unfinished novel, to show and not tell, to not bore the reader, yada yada yada, I had 3 chapters worth of revised content stored on my flash drive. Did I bother to back this up on the laptop? Nay, for that would have been smart. Instead, I kept plugging at it on my flash drive. So, a couple weeks ago I went swimming, taking my keys along in my pocket without bothering to take them out. Flash drive was attached. Flash drive is now dead. The memorial service was painful. Have you ever seen the inside of a flash drive? It doesn't look much like anything, especially now. Anyway, I digress. The obvious moral of the story is to always back up your work. The second, and like unto it, is never get your flash drive wet and then immediately see if it works, because it will get very hot and fry its own innards.
He chose poorly.
The third lesson, and more focused on the topic at hand, I learned as I once again began the revisions that will take me to day job quitting glory. Moments before beginning this article, in fact. It was something as rudimentary as sentences end with periods, and as oft repeated as show don't tell. It's the words that tell the story. For my ADD-riddled brain, it is important to find a focal point if I'm going to accomplish anything. My mind is always shooting toward the end, and I wonder if it is primarily a beginning writer's curse. We see the successful authors such as Stephen King, George Martin, Michael Crichton writing their own way through the world. We see the travel, the working from home, the idyllic writer's den filled floor to ceiling with books and a swath in leather and bearskin. In other words, it's the ends we see, not the means. I feel the need for speed, as Tom Cruise so eloquently put, so that I might reach the end as quickly as possible. After all, if I don't hurry and finish this one, I cannot possibly go on to the next one, which, of course, I do, and the next, until I am a veritable stable of racehorses, stamping and snorting to get out of the gates and into the hands of eager acquiring editors. We all know that to have a successful career as a novelist, one must churn out fully developed books without blemish at a pace of about 3 per year. As we are writing Chapter 1, we must always keep in mind Chapter 17 when our main character experiences something completely incidental that may or may not affect the plot down the road. Then, of course, we have to keep in mind the events of Chapter 23, 26, and 37. After all, I've just used foreshadowing in the fourth paragraph. If this is you, I recommend the following course of action. Slow down. Chapter 17 will not happen lest Chapter 1 be completed, followed by Chapter 2, and so on. But you must slow down further. Chapter 1 will not be complete until you finish that first page, that first paragraph, that first sentence, and that first word. It is the words that tell the story. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. How do you write a novel? One word at a time. Of course, the age-old adage is true. You must allow yourself to write drivel and not get bogged down trying to make every sentence perfect, but even drivel must come one word at a time. Maybe you like to write scenes as they come to you, then plug them in all the right places later. Sometimes you need to do that because you don't quite know where the scene is supposed to go, but you know it needs to happen. So what? Go ahead and write it. Live within the scene and let all else fade to the back of your mind. We cannot be fully aware of our surroundings when our minds are elsewhere. Neither can we fully describe the scene we see in our head if we're constantly seeing the big picture. I'm the kind of person to live in the moment, to take life one day at a time. We all say it to ourselves, but because novels are a microcosm of life itself, we feel the need to microwave it into existence. We can think up the whole story in an hour, and yet it takes months to write it all out. We have to live our stories in the moment. This is why outlining is good if you have lots of ideas at once that you just have to remember. Write the stuff down to remind you if you must, but always live in the moment when it comes time to tell the details. Stories are told one word at a time. Relish it while you still have the breath to tell them. So I'm going to get to the feedback from Mr. Doug Rapson regarding the interview with T. Morris.
Hey there, Jim. It's Doug from an unassuming little program I like to call the Geek Acres Netcast. I wanted to drop you a note after listening to the recent episode 7 and your interview with T. Morris.
Yes.
Now, I've never met T. I've heard him across the far point spectrum, and I'm familiar with his work. But a handful of his comments really left me annoyed with your guest.
Yay!
The infuriating part is that I agreed with several of his thoughts. I enjoyed the first part of the interview that you had aired earlier. I actually enjoyed the first portion of the most recent interview. But when the illustrious Mr. Morris started taking swipes at people, I had to stop and rewind.
But he's so good at it.
T said that netcasters needed to get over themselves, but the more he went on, the more his tone ratcheted up.
Yes.
He himself said that the term netcast annoyed the crap out of him. Maybe he needs to address his issues and get over it.
Kind of annoys me, too.
T also used a pretty broad brush when he said that people who would use the term netcast would disagree with his TiVo analogy.
He's a broad guy.
That subscribing to audio content in an aggregator is not analogous to subscribing to TV shows on a DVR. Of course they're similar.
Yeah, I'm with you.
To say otherwise would just be silly.
Yeah, I haven't heard anybody complain.
In the end, it wasn't the fact that T prefers the term podcast to netcast.
Mm-mm.
It was the way that he stepped on some other people's heads to raise himself up above the crowd.
Now,
that's what got me riled up, to use his words. He seems like a talented guy. I wouldn't think he'd have to travel that road. The thing that perplexes me, as any content creator will tell you, there's no shortage of blogs and vidcasts and podcasts out there. Every couple of months, I have to cull content from my queue to make room for new and interesting offerings. Why would someone intentionally run the risk of alienating a segment of your potential audience?
Because that's what he does.
I'm not saying that you should suck up to every last soul who's online in order to garner a fan base, but a simple amount of respect wouldn't be the worst thing in the world either. Ooh. It's a shame, too. Several people that I admire have chosen to ally themselves with T and have participated in his projects.
Now wait,
I might really enjoy his work if I gave it a shake. Unlikely to happen in the near future, at least until I settle myself back down. You know, get over myself.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that he'll really lose any sleep over it.
That's
after all,
to get over.
Who cares what a humorless, small-time netcaster thinks anyway, right? Enjoy your show. Looking forward to the next episode. Then again, I'm a lemming. I'll listen to just about anything.
That's Doug Rapson going off the cliff right there. And beautiful work, Doug. Wow. Calm down, people. Calm down. Yeah. Well, we're going to go to a promo, and we'll be back after this.
From the worlds between the pages of your favorite book to adventures teetering on the edge of the dice, the pilot's at the helm and our course is set. The dream ship gathers speed across the sea of possibilities. Welcome aboard, the Dragonhearth.
I'm Tracy Hickman.
And I'm Laura Hickman. Each month we explore the limitless expanse of creative fiction and games, from the nuts and bolts of writing and publishing to the worlds of our creation.
Whether you're looking for practical advice on plot, character, and setting, we're in search of new and distant realms of speculative fiction to explore. You'll find a home here on Dragonhearth.
Join our next voyage through your favorite RSS server or by visiting us at dragonhearthproductions.com. Tracy and Laura Hickman's Dragonhearth, voyages into the realms of imagination.
The
This is Indiana Jim, host of the podcast Things Are Looking Up. I'm cast adrift on the sea of possibilities. My creative engine is stalled. I can't find a friendly port of call anywhere. The captain's cabin just isn't the refuge it once was. Whenever I find myself in this situation, I tune my wireless to the podcast I most look forward to, and that's Tracy and Laura Hickman's Dragon Hearth. I tune to them for inspiration and motivation. I'm hanging on tight, Tracy. Here comes a wave. You wouldn't believe the size of this thing.
I have the following note from Christopher Walker, and I'm probably not going to share everything in it. I'm not sure what was meant for public and what was meant for just me, but we'll look at it a little bit. When I played the pod culture thing that I did with Brad and Christina, we talked a lot about religion and Christianity, and this was something unexpected for Chris, and something honestly I forgot we talked about, but it's not something I'm embarrassed of. And here's what Chris says. I just wanted you to know that now I have to subscribe to another podcast because of you. It's all your fault. Completely. As if I didn't have enough time in the day to listen to the podcast that I already have. I was going to bypass pod culture completely until you three got onto the subject of Narnia. It's always refreshing to be completely surprised when you run into fellow believers on the internet, especially in the area of podcasting, because mine tend to assume that the default ideological position of most podcasters is that of liberal something other than religious. The discussion that ensued following the mention of Narnia really took me aback because, man, you've got guts putting that out on your feed. But at least people know now where you definitively stand, and I hope that your listeners won't put up a big stink about you finally laying it all out on paper, where you stand, that you really don't intend your podcast to be a grand religious soapbox, and how you plan to reflect the character of Jesus in the things you do. There are enough religious wackos out there, including an older woman whom I was unfortunate enough to run into while doing laundry a few months ago. I can best describe her as wanting to convert me to her local church more than her belief system, which, ironically, Christian as best as I could tell. Judging by the thoughtful discussion on your last show, I'm glad to know that neither you nor Brad or Christina are that type. It's along these lines that I want to chime in about the last comment that Brad made about serenity. I don't know if he meant it this way, but he seemed to say that as long as you believe in something, anything, then you're good enough for God. Book always struck me as someone who practiced his religion as a way to live a good life and not because he was in love with its creator. I think it's best reflected in his last words, quote, "I don't care what you believe, just believe." Book wanted Mal to believe in something that was moral and courageous and good. This is a good thing in and of itself, but I don't think that's what Lewis and Tolkien were trying to communicate in their respective books. Unfortunately, and this is my only disappointment with the Firefly series, the subtlety of Book's character and the hints we get at his past muddle the differences between religions, and he makes it seem as if every religion is only about being good. What Book said makes perfect sense for him because apparently he's done some pretty shady things, and it seems as if he was attempting to atone for those misdeeds by cloistering at the Abbey and then traveling with Mal and his crew. But being good is not the main thrust of Christianity. It's only an aspect. And other religions have other aspects that are more important than this basic commonality. The thrust of Christianity is that we're all like Book with shady pasts that we're trying to atone for. But there's also a pardon on the table, and we can take it or leave it. Leaving it and living a good life will perhaps get us a lesser sentence for good behavior, but it won't commute the sentence like the pardon will. If there are true things in this world, and if that is true, then that is our insulin, a cure to the condition that we all share with Book, our dark side. It's not ice cream or a way of being good that we merely prefer that will do the trick. And I don't think we Christians should ever lose sight of that when we try to communicate our message to others, or there will be no reason for people to accept that pardon if being good by believing something else is good enough. Christianity is offensive enough that we believers shouldn't be like the lady who cornered me while I was in my apartment's laundry facility. But neither should we stray too far in the other direction and try to remove the offense already inherent within Christianity either. Our responsibility is to generate opportunities in which people will ask us about why we believe what we do, not to stand in fiery judgment over them or to proclaim that any belief system will do, as if merely believing any religion, even Christianity, makes it true. Thank you, Chris. That was deep, man. And he's absolutely right as far as our perspective is concerned, and that is there's a pardon on the table. And that's the difference. It's not good behavior. It's not parole. It's a pardon. And I hope that If you have questions, you will feel free to email them to me, podcast@indianajim.net. And that's enough for this discussion. If you have any questions, feel free. And I do hope that, as in the Brad and Christina pod culture interview segment, that you do see that I'm not out here to judge anyone. I'm just out here to have fun. And hopefully you see a little bit about what I believe reflected in the things I do and things I say. So anyway, things are looking up for Paul Potts, the winner of Britain's Got Talent. Things are looking up because he's realizing his dream. And we have to get back to the belief that we can achieve our dreams again. Because we're all given dreams. We're all given things we feel like we can do, we can accomplish. Leanne Mabry is doing a good work with the Joe Murphy Foundation. And they're raising money for this charity to research leiomyosarcoma, which took the life of Joe Murphy. And Leanne won the Joe Murphy Memorial Award at Parsecs this year for her work doing that. And, you know, we all have these dreams that we can achieve if we have enough confidence, like Paul was saying. And, you know, I'm not sure where my dreams are going at this point, but I'm going to follow them like a lemming off a cliff. And I think that'll do it for this episode of Things Are Looking Up. Remember, feedback to podcast@indianajim.net. And go check out sportscast.wordpress.com. Stay tuned for next week's episode of Fanboy Sportscast, as the quality should improve. And we'll be talking about week two of the National Football League and also about the approach to the playoffs in Major League Baseball. And we may, actually, Kevin has some mixed martial arts to discuss. So if that interests you at all, go ahead and tune in, and it'll actually be an intelligent discussion. Not any of the, man, that guy can kick anybody, you know. No, it'll be intelligent, it'll be worth hearing, and I hope you'll join us. So thank you very much for joining me. I'm out of here.
Now, Jazla gets you to the new frontiers of radio automation.
The new frontiers of radio automation.
Bring your station into the new age of music and let Jazla do the rest. Jazla, the leading radio automation software.
Software.